Well, folks, the clock on the clubhouse wall says that it is time to get started, so let's do just that. To start with, I'd like to introduce to you Ben Mack. And Ben is really, really best known for his huge accomplishments in marketing and advertising. He actually won an American Marketing Association Effie Award for taking Yomega Yo-Yos from $8 million a year to over $120 million a year. Now, how did he do that? So many people ask. Well, Ben has uncovered an underlying structure of branding that has never before been revealed until his best-selling business book, Think Two Products Ahead. What you're about to learn will reinforce and leverage your inner game of success. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome a Magic Castle award-winning magician, a student of Buckminster Fuller, a former senior vice president of BBDO, brand strategy director on Singular, Dr. Ben Mack.
Awesome, Mark Horn. Thank you so much for kicking us off. And I got a question over the internet while you were speaking, Mark, that I'd like to share with everybody. And that was that Blake asked, why does Mark Horn give the same introduction for you, Ben, every time? Now, Mark, we haven't prompted this. I didn't tell you this question was coming up because I didn't know that Blake was going to ask it. But
right.
Do you want to field that question or shall I?
I will field it on my end, and you feel free to field it on your end.
Very good.
I do it for continuity so that what we are doing is consistent throughout the entire series of the Profitable Magic Calls.
Awesome. Exactly. Continuity is huge because, Mark, as you've heard me say many times, for I know it's especially true in the United States, and it's actually true all over the world, and that is we tend to know what we like because we tend to like what we already know. And so by having continuity, we go through rituals which are very familiar. And those familiarity rituals actually help people feel more comfortable within certain environments. Now, it's been shown, for instance, in television research, that they've tried having different beginnings and endings to sitcoms or to dramas or things along those lines.
Right.
And people, the likability actually goes up when you have the same opening song and the same opening sequences. Sure, we can point out differences like within The Simpsons, where there was a tiny little difference in terms of what Bart wrote on the chalkboard. And that actually helped, you know, engage the audience to look closely because what is Bart going to write this month? But there are elements that we want to be familiar from one exposure to the next because that similarity, that familiarity actually helps bond listeners and prospects with us and with our services. And one of the things I've been a big student of is looking at profitable rituals that go on. And, Mark, you know, last week one of the people that we had on our program was Jerry Clark.
Yes.
And Jerry Clark is such a master of energetic rituals. On his teleseminars, he does the go, 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 and he relates everything back to a rhino. And those common themes, those common threads, those rituals become something that people really like and can bond and interact with. And he takes it from online or from over the telephone to also in person so that he creates rituals of greeting so that people that are students of his refer to each other as Big Money. So you'd be Big Money Mark and you'd refer to me as Big Money Ben. And these might seem like silly little trivial things, but when taken as a whole, they have an extraordinarily, in fact, a profoundly profitable effect. He is one of the people that has the truest loyal following, both online and in person. He is a beloved speaker, and there are those that won't miss a live, you know, when if he's talking near them, they will go and seek him out. And it's these tiny little things, it's these tiny little rituals that can help build that extraordinarily loyal following. Now, I know that our listeners tonight have an interest in increasing their profitability. And, Mark, the three things that I promise to teach people tonight is that, number one, they're going to learn the number one mistake that cripples your message from going viral. And I'm going to teach you guys a simple test that will ensure the likelihood that your message can be contagious. Because if your message can't pass this test, I'm going to guarantee you it can't go viral. So you're going to learn a simple and powerful test. That's number one. Number two is there are four profitable preferences. I'm going to teach you what those four profitable preferences are, how to identify what you most likely are, and more importantly, how to look at your team to make sure that you have a profitable balance, because you actually need to have all four preferences represented. And Mark, we have a tendency, most people have a tendency of wanting to surround themselves with like-minded people.
Yes, absolutely.
And many times that preference to surround people that are just like ourselves can get in the way of our profitability. We actually need a diversity of thinking styles around us to have that breakthrough, to make something have that next level of success. The third area we're going to talk tonight is one of those hot topics for me, Mark, that just yesterday when I was in Manhattan, it came up. We were in a mastermind for Tom Bell, and somebody used the word brainstorm in a colloquial way. And by colloquial, I mean the way that we talk about just stuff on the street. You know, we use
right.
the word Kleenex, which is a brand name, to mean any kind of facial tissue. People toss around the word brainstorm and brainstorming as though it is what you do when you come around to talk about ideas. But the actual discipline of brainstorming was crafted and detailed and researched by a gentleman named Osborne. He's the O in BBDO. And he studied what was most likely to create profitable ideas that would get to market the fastest and yield the greatest return. And that study of that process was what he called brainstorming. And tonight we're going to talk about what brainstorming actually is, because the one phrase that I hear again and again when I'm invited to quote-unquote brainstorm is, there are no such thing as a bad idea. And Mark, any idea that we're investing our time, our money, our energy, our resources, our vitality, the ideas that we spend too much time contemplating,
yeah.
those are not good ideas.
No,
there certainly
not.
Are things as bad ideas. What Osborne said was that during a specific phase, we're to defer judgment. But it's a very limited phase. Of course there are bad ideas. The bad ideas are the ones that waste our energies and our money. So to start things off tonight, we're going to talk about the one mistake that cripples people's messages from going viral. And so, Mark, you have a couple websites that are up online, yes?
I do, and some that are in maintenance, yes.
Absolutely. One of yours, for instance, is Liquid Life Solutions.
Yes.
And what's neat about Liquid Life Solutions is that for those that are listening, if I were to ask them to write down Liquid Life Solutions and not have repeated it three times like I just did,
right,
the chances are fairly high that they would actually be able to write down that three-word phrase.
Okay.
And that's critical. Because in order for an idea to go viral, people must be able to replicate the idea with 100% accuracy. Because if folks can't replicate your idea accurately, it's not going to be able to get passed from one person to the next, to the next, to the next. And so
okay.
a test I've created, Mark, I call it the telephone test. And it's based on that game that many of us played in elementary school. Did you ever play the telephone game in elementary school?
Yeah, is that the one where you're in a big line of folks and you start one word at one end and see how it ends up at the other end? Is that the game?
That is exactly the game. And,
okay.
Mark, what often happened when, if they be in a line or if they be in a circle, when it goes from one person and then 20 people later, what comes out the other side?
Usually something that's not even close to what started at the front.
Exactly. And so if the idea keeps mutating, if the idea keeps changing, if people can't accurately replicate your named product or service or your tagline, whatever it is that you're hoping will go viral, if people can't immediately repeat it back to you, the chances of it going viral are virtually nil.
That makes
and
sense.
So what I use is the telephone test. Now, Mark, you and I work together a lot, so you're fairly familiar with our products, with the products and services, the websites that I'm using.
Yes, I am, Ben.
So this wouldn't be a fair test if I were to say a website that you've heard me say before.
Agreed.
And so for those that are at home, whether you are listening on the computer or if you are listening to on the telephone, if you called in and are live on the call with us, the simulcast people, obviously you're on live with us as well. But what I'm going to ask you to do is I'm going to say a phrase in just a moment, and I want you to write down the phrase, and we're going to see if you don't get it exactly right. So if you've got a pen or a piece of paper, I want you to grab it, and I'm going to say it in just a moment. And the phrase is, they say it can't be done. And so, no, Mark, you've heard me say it before, but will you say that phrase back to me, please?
They say it can't be done.
Excellent. Now, that happens to be a phrase that I've been using for a domain name. They say it can't be done. And to me, that's one of the greatest calls to action, is because when somebody says that it's not doable, someone will step up to the case and say, sure it can. You know, the four-minute mile, climbing Mount Everest. There's something within our human spirit where people go, I want to do it, or I want to see it being done. That's not the point of this lesson. The point of this lesson is to be able to come up with a phrase so that when you say it to somebody, they can immediately repeat it right back to you. And what I often do is I literally go out on the street or into a mall or someplace where there are public people, and I bring with me a clipboard. Mark, can you imagine why I might bring a clipboard with me?
So you could take some notes. You could jot some things down.
That is exactly what I want people to be able to see. But in truth, the reason why I have a clipboard with me is to let people know that I'm there to ask questions. It makes me look as though I'm in an official capacity.
Okay.
And so I'll go up to somebody and say, excuse me, I'd love to ask you one question, and it's going to take less than 30 seconds. Would you mind sparing 25 more seconds with me so I can complete a very short survey? And most people will say, sure. And so I proceed and I say, I'm going to say a phrase to you, and I'm going to say it once, and I'd love you to say it directly back to me. Would that be okay? And when the person says yes, then I say the phrase, whether it be profitable magic, or whether it be they say it can't be done, or whether it be poker without cards. But I'm looking to see if there's any hesitation whatsoever between the person hearing the phrase and being able to repeat it back to me. Because listeners at home, if when I said they say it can't be done, and if you wrote down a different series of words than that, then I'm truly challenged that you are going to be able to accurately replicate the named product or service or a website name or things along those lines. You know, Poker Without Cards is the name of my novel because, frankly, it's an easy idea to be able to remember and be able to pair it back. Now, Mark, you were about to say something.
I was just curious. You had said that when you're asking those folks, say that you're saying to them, they say it can't be done. What are you looking for, Ben? How are you noticing how they are responding to you? Are there clues that they're giving you as to how they're processing what you said to them?
Thank you so much, Mark. Absolutely. Because in the telephone test, what I'm looking for is a smile and an ability to immediately be able to say the phrase back to me.
Okay.
If the person is frowning, if the person has any hesitation, if the person isn't able to immediately say the phrase back, that's a big red flag. Because if I ask 20 people, I literally want to be able to have a phrase that all 20 people are able to say back spontaneously, immediately, with ease. If I have a phrase that passes 20 people in a row, I know I'm fairly safe that it's an idea that is likely to be replicated accurately. Because in order for a notion, in order for an idea to go viral, it must be able to be replicated accurately. Because there's no sense people talking about our product or service if they wind up talking about a different set of words than the actual name of our product or service.
Understood, yes.
So that's the first tool, because there's so many times, Mark, that I am at a seminar or things along those lines, and somebody comes up to me and they say, "What do you think of this product of mine?" And I look down and there's four or five words that I have a tough time saying with ease.
Okay.
And what I want to share with them is simply that unless people can immediately repeat the phrase back easily, it's unlikely that they're going to be able to talk about you to their friends. And getting that type of endorsement, getting people talking about you, getting into the conversation, that's where the heart of branding really takes off. When those magical ads come along that truly infuse an amazing energy into a named product or service, where that product or service just goes ballistic, where there's suddenly more money coming in than was ever expected, one of the keys to that, Mark, is that people are talking about it.
Okay.
Recently, for instance, this goes back, it's not so recent, I guess it's about 10 years old now, the whole Got Milk campaign, where people would wind up then taking the construct of Got Milk and turn it into Got Flowers, Got whatever it might have been, but it was a repeatable construct that people could talk about. And whether people are talking about it on the forums or if people are talking about it to their family or friends or in instant messaging, one of the keys is that you have a repeatable idea. Now, Mark, I'm certainly not going to suggest that I am the best at creating viral ideas, because I certainly wouldn't know how to judge that, and I certainly can point to a lot of people that have probably had greater, not probably, that have definitely had bigger success than me.
Okay.
What I do know is that I have been able to consistently create a fair amount of buzz very quickly online. The first time I did it was around my novel, Poker Without Cards, where I was able to have 300,000 people download my novel in less than a year. A year later, I was able to get, it happens to be the same number of 300,000, but 300,000 people to go to one website, whatwouldbillhicks.com, in less than 90 days, with less than $100 in advertising. Now, I know the phrase, "What would Bill Hicks say," would only make sense to those that were familiar with Bill Hicks.
Right.
But that was my target audience. Because the real goal of branding is not to be liked by everybody, but to be loved and adored by your core target audience.
Say that again, Ben, would you please?
Thank you for asking, Mark. Absolutely. The real magic within branding is not to be liked by everybody, but to be loved and adored by your core target audience.
Wow. Well,
there are times that marketers get scared of offending somebody. And you're unlikely to be loved and adored unless you're putting a stake in the ground, unless you're truly polarizing some people. Because if you try and be liked by everybody, you're probably going to be middle of the road. And unless you've got a $40 or $60 or $100 million a year advertising budget, being middle of the road largely means that you aren't really going to get any traction with anybody. It is oftentimes more expedient, in fact, almost always, better for a marketer of a new product or service to truly take a controversial position and have the integrity to back that up, to make a bold claim and live it. because when you make a bold claim and live it, you're going to be respected for reflecting the values of your core target audience. And the fact that you happen to alienate or polarize some people away from you, that's okay. Because in the middle of the road, people aren't buying. Those that buy are the ones that passionately connect with you, the ones that believe you. And the reason why folks have a tendency of believing is because you've demonstrated the integrity behind your bold position.
Okay, explore that a little more for us, please, would you?
Thank you for asking, Mark. Absolutely. For instance, you've seen me on different internet marketing boards or forums or threads, and I'm not the most popular guy there.
I've seen you actually be removed from such places, yes.
Right. But if we look, for instance, on the Michelle Fortin board, if we go to the off-topic section, I have the second most read thread that's on there for the first chapter of Guerrilla Marketing.
Right. Yes, I'm familiar.
And I haven't been on that board in 6 weeks. And yet people are still talking about it. Now, as I finish that book with Polly Sable and the other contributing authors that are coming into that project,
yes.
The fact that thread discussing the first chapter for my guerrilla marketing book is the second most read thread on the member content section of the Michelle Fortin board.
Right.
It demonstrates that there's something going on there, that there's some energy that's there. The fact that that many people, that over 6,888 people I see presently have checked out what that thread is about the first draft chapter of my guerrilla marketing book.
Right.
That's a lot of exposure. That's a lot of energy around that idea. I had some bold, hard-hitting ideas that I didn't back away from, that when people said that I was ridiculous, when people said that I was out of line, I welcomed them to their perception and I held my ground. I wasn't caustic for the sake of being argumentative. I was staying true to the ideas that I was presenting. Perhaps I sound defensive here, and Mark, I know that in this discussion right now that I'm going a little bit around in circles, and I don't mean to do that. There are three main ideas that we want to talk about tonight. Number one is that the number one idea that cripples your message is that it's not repeatable. And that's why we brought up the telephone test. The second main point that we're going to talk about are the four profitable preferences. And the four profitable preferences, these were identified by the same man that coined the word brainstorm and brainstorming. And so many people that I meet, Mark, have been conditioned by their traditional education that they are not creative, which is just silly. We're all creative.
Oh, absolutely.
The question is, in what ways are we creative? And Osborne said that there are four primary ways in which we can be creative. We can be creative in terms of what he calls ideating. And ideating is coming up with new ideas. The person who can just think of novel idea after novel idea after novel idea. That's an ideator. There's a different type of creativity that's called a clarifier. And a clarifier is the one that loves to create distinctions, loves to clarify. Mark, do you mean this or do you mean that? And yet a third type is an implementer. Now, the implementer is the one that, if given an idea, loves to go and take it and put it into action.
Okay.
And a developer is the fourth type of creative preference. And the developer is, if you tell them the big idea, they love breaking it down into component pieces and figuring out all of the little steps in between that are going to be required to make sure that the idea can be brought to market. Now, here's the deal, Mark. You've heard of the phrase, birds of a feather flock together?
Yes.
Well, that really, from what I've seen, it really holds to be true. We tend to hang out with people that are very similar to ourselves. And so many times I'll see clarifiers hanging out with other clarifiers because they enjoy talking to each other about the distinctions that they can see.
Okay.
And the reason why they love doing that is because it's somebody who thinks just like them. And they can spend hours upon hours upon hours talking about fine, minute distinctions. You get two clarifiers talking together, and they will talk and talk and talk and work out distinction after distinction after distinction. And, Mark, do you know what happens?
Probably not much of anything.
Exactly. You get two clarifiers talking together, and not a lot of stuff happens. Same thing, you get two ideators together. Remember, an ideator is the type of person that can think of novel idea after novel idea after novel idea.
Right.
Well, if you get two people like that that just can think about something crazy and off the wall and again and again and again, you put two of them in a room for 2 hours, and they're going to have 300 unique ideas. And at the end of the day, you know what's going to happen when you've got 300 different unique ideas?
Chaos and confusion.
Exactly. Again, not a lot of anything.
Yeah.
Because it lacks direction. Now, you put two implementers together, and you give them 2 hours, and they immediately, they pick up the phone, they're doing stuff, and at the end of 2 hours, likelihood is that they've gotten a lot of stuff done.
Right.
But it just might not be a lot of stuff that's actually contributing to the overall project.
It's a lot of activity.
It's a lot of activity, and they might have been very good at building up stuff or setting up things or getting accounts started online or stuff along those lines, but what they're doing might not be required to bring off the project successfully.
Right.
Now, you get two developers together in a room, and you give them a big idea, and they start breaking everything down into component pieces, and at the end of 2 hours, you're going to have an outline, you know, a five-page outline of a lot of tiny little details that only a developer would wind up thinking about.
Okay.
Now, the limitation of a developer is that the developers will keep developing the outline for years and years and years and not actually put it into action.
Okay.
The implementers are immediately ready to go and put stuff into action, but it's not really well developed, and it might not even be something that's going to be that profitable, and it's not likely to be very novel.
Right.
What you want is a healthy balance of all four of these. You want to make sure that you've got a clarifier who's around to be able to help you clarify exactly what it is that you're trying to do. And you want to have an ideator around because in our world where we are bombarded by too many messages, while we tend to like what we already know, we also are struck by novel representations of what we're already familiar with. And so without some sort of level of novelty, it's unlikely for a new product or service to become successful, because why are we going to go with something new when there's probably something that we're already familiar with and trust?
Yes.
Now, so we've talked about these four basic types of creative preferences, and we talked about how one of the biggest mistakes that many entrepreneurs make is that they partner with somebody who likes to think just like they do.
Yes.
So one of the real keys is to partner with people that have different preferences than ourselves, because that's likely to be complementary. Now, one of the real keys, and this is so important, Mark, is that the different style preferences oftentimes will bug the frick out of each other.
a little bit of friction, I guess.
Friction is exactly what I meant by frick. That's
okay.
Thank you so much, Mark Horn. That's exactly what I meant by bug the frick out of somebody.
Okay.
Yes. You know, you put a clarifier with an implementer, and the two of them are like butting heads, because the clarifier is wanting to create distinctions, and the implementer is going, "Can't we start already? Can't we start already? Haven't we already talked about this?"
Okay.
Now, here's the deal. So we've talked about two of the three things that I promised that we were going to cover this evening.
Right.
The first was in terms of the one thing that people do that...